Thank you for coming out. Good to be here. This is what I look like. It's mostly my fault. Well, it's all my fault. I wish I had an excuse, you know? Like, I had to gain all this weight for a movie. There's no movie. If you saw me eat, you would think there were multiple movies. Are they doing a live-action Shrek? This guy's gonna be perfect! I'm wearing my shirt untucked. The untucked shirt, the fat man's last hurrah. Next stop, Momo. You might see a guy with his shirt untucked and think, oh, was he in a hurry? Is he going casual? But you should know, someone very close to that man saw him with his shirt tucked in and said, don't do that. That's visually unpleasing. You look better not fully dressed. The untucked shirt, it's like the male Wonder Bra. There's a surprise underneath, and you're not going to like it. This is not an Untuck It. Untuck It, which is a brand of shirt. I do love those Untuck It commercials. They present it like some revolutionary technology.
It's a shirt that can be worn untucked.
Wow! Like a magic shirt?
That's right.
Can't other shirts do that?
No, this is a special shirt. It goes with our unzipped pants. And our unbuckled belt. And combined with your uncombed hair, you can look unemployed. And be unwelcome in restaurants. That's unbelievable.
This shirt is actually a 2XL. That's right, I did it. Mission accomplished. There should be a moving up ceremony for when you hit 2XL. It is with great pride and slight disgust that we present this garment roughly the size of a circus tent to this slob who actually struggles to put on his own socks. He may now burp for no reason at all. I am new to the 2XL community. They've been very welcoming. Did some research. You know what the size after 2XL is? Kill yourself. Oh, it's 3X! Triple X! That's pornographic. It's so fat, it's obscene. Triple X does sound like some fat-on-fat action. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm heading there, hopefully by the end of the show. I don't know what happened. All I did was eat abusively for 40 years. And suddenly I'm fat? That doesn't seem fair. I am now at the size, when I go in clothing stores, salespeople look at me like, we got nothing for you. And you can't use our bathroom. When I go out to eat, if I order a salad, the waiter's always like, aww.
Look at you try.
I'm always afraid he's going to gather the whole staff. The fat pig is trying. The fat pig is trying. Hi, how are they? I've always talked about my weight and my stand-up, but in the past, after shows, if I ran into audience members, they'd be like, Jim, you're not that fat. You're not that fat. But now after shows, people are like, good show. You nailed it. I don't care. I like to eat. I like to eat. Well, you know, when you like to eat, what's weird is people assume you enjoy cooking.
Well, you must know your way around the kitchen.
I know where the food is.
Well, you must love to cook.
Look, I like to sleep. It doesn't mean I want to build a bed. The truth is, I don't like to do anything. Like, when I order delivery, I'm kind of annoyed they don't know what I want already. What, do I have to do everything? I did lose some weight last summer.
Thank you. Thank you.
I did. Well, I had my appendix removed. Still counts. I didn't know what the appendix was, and since I'm an idiot, I just pretended like I did.
The doctor was like, we have to remove your appendix. And I was like, both of them? Luckily, he thought I was kidding. He's like, ha!
I'm so grateful he didn't call me out. I don't know what it would have said. You know, like,
there's only one appendix.
Oh, appendix. I thought you said lungs. To me, they sound similar because I'm dumb. I didn't know what the appendix was, but I don't feel that bad. The doctor told me science isn't even sure what the appendix does exactly. Science isn't even sure why the appendix exists. And I heard that, and I was like, oh, my gosh, the appendix is like a Kardashian. Think about it. It's a mystery to everyone. But for some of us, causes excruciating pain and needs to be removed with a knife. Obviously, I'm not promoting violence against any of the Kardashians, just the mother. There's always one person that gets too into that joke. Yes, kill the mother. Kill her and smear her blood on my face. I think it's strange. Science doesn't know what the appendix does. That means nobody knows.
You never hear, science doesn't know, but Earl has a theory. Earl, when you were cleaning the toilet, you mumbled something.
How is that an acceptable answer from the entire scientific community?
Yeah, we don't know. Well, back to cloning everything.
And they just remove the appendix. That's the solution.
Take it out. We don't know what it does.
And it's fine. But you know the first time they did it,
we removed your appendix. Let's see what happens.
I had my appendix removed in Alaska. That's not why I went there. I was on vacation with my family, and I had this sharp pain in my abdomen. And since I'm a genius, my first thought was, oh, I pulled a muscle in my stomach. That's what I sincerely thought. See all these muscles? I thought I pulled one, doing nothing. And the pain was overwhelming. I couldn't move. My wife was like, I'm going to go for help. But we're in a remote area of Alaska, so she just ran to nearby cabins. Eventually, she came back, all out of breath. She's like, I found a guy. I was like, oh, good, is he a doctor? And she goes, no. I go, is he a nurse? And she goes, he's a lawyer. I guess he can do my will. So then this lawyer doctor came over, started asking me questions. And when you're in pain, all questions are annoying. He's like, do you have a fever? And I was like, are you even a lawyer? He's like, is it a dull pain? There's nothing boring about this. Eventually, I had to be airlifted on advice of counsel. I was airlifted, which was embarrassing, because unlike a heroic airlift of someone from a natural disaster or a wounded soldier, I was just a fat guy with a tummy ache. The helicopter pilot was like, wait, your stomach hurts? Yeah, it's real sore. Do you know how much it costs to rent a helicopter?
But my tummy hurts.
I knew it was expensive. I sat on that helicopter the entire ride just holding my stomach and praying, please don't let this be gas. Sweet Jesus, don't let this be gas. Because if it's gas, I don't think I can return to my family.
Hey, kids, Daddy's back. Had some gas.
Took a helicopter ride. None of you wanted to go to college, did you? A little out of our price range now. We don't know what caused the gas. It might have been Daddy's three breakfast burritos. Pretty much a medical mystery. I was airlifted to the closest hospital. They removed my appendix. They did a good job. I mean, I'm female now. The surgeon who removed my appendix, his name was Dr. Muffaletta, which is also the name of a delicious New Orleans sandwich. And I do look like a guy who would know that. So when he introduced himself, I was like, am I being visited by the ghost of Sandwich Pat? Is Nurse Po'boy about to come in? I woke up after the surgery, covered in Mardi Gras beads. So I woke up and there was a nurse standing there and she was like, the surgery was a success. Just let me know if it hurts when you pee. And I was like, where's the appendix? How exactly did you remove it? This doesn't sound like a success at all. Then she explained, right before the surgery, they inserted a catheter. I didn't know what that was, so I was like, oh, okay. Then I started piecing it together. Hurts when I pee, catheter. I'm suing this hospital. You'll be hearing from my lawyer, doctor. What monsters. If given a choice of peeing all over myself or having a tube inserted in my penis, I'll take the pee shout. I guess I'm old-fashioned, you know? Checking out of the hospital, the desk clerk was so excited. He was like, you had your appendix removed. I had my gallbladder taken out. We should vacation together. What are the odds two fat Americans had surgery on their digestive system? I was released from the hospital the day after the surgery. They gave me painkillers. They also instructed me to do some walking, which I assume was part of the recovery, but it kind of felt like a commentary on my weight. Have you ever done any walking? Have you ever leaned forward and let your legs propel your fat ass? Let's take a break from your motorized scooter. And I was in Alaska, so I thought this was perfect. So I returned to my family, and we immediately went on a hike. And it was great. Alaska's beautiful. My kids were having fun. I was pretending like I enjoyed being outside. And then suddenly we saw a bear like 500 yards away, this huge brown bear, like way bigger than a gummy bear. And I was so excited because I watched nature shows, but I had never seen a bear in person. So it felt like a celebrity sighting. I was like, oh my God, I've watched you on Animal Planet. You're so much taller in person. Can we do a selfie? But unlike a celebrity sighting, there was the risk of death. Like you never hear, we're in a restaurant, Tom Hanks walked in, and then he came over and murdered my family. That never happened. But the bear was far away, so I took out my phone and I started taking pictures, and then suddenly the bear stood up, roared, and looked right at me. Started creeping towards me, tilting his head back and forth, almost like he recognized me. That guy looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman. I was terrified. Luckily, we were with a tour guide, and I looked at him, and he goes, don't worry, I have bear spray. And I was like, do you have anything stronger? Like a bear gun? Because I don't think this bear's approaching to get his hair done. And the bear kept coming. And then suddenly the tour guy goes, okay, I want everyone to start walking backwards slowly. Walk backwards slowly. I guess so the bear could catch up. So we started walking backwards slowly. By then the bear was in a full sprint. I had surgery 12 hours ago, so I smelled delicious. I was also sunburned, so I probably looked like a giant land salmon. The bear couldn't believe his luck. Like, I'm not going to have to eat for a month. He's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to be eaten by a bear. Which is ironic given how many animals I've eaten. So I started humming Circle of Life and continued walking backwards slowly. I should point out, it's not like we were walking backwards slowly to a car or a cabin. We were walking backwards slowly to nothing. It probably looked like we were teasing the bear, like, come and get it, Mr. Bear. You looking to get a little grizzly? Craving a little 2XL, are you? And before you knew it, the bear was upon us, and he killed us, and we died. such a bloody mess.
No, what really happened is at one point the tour guy pulled out this thing. It looked like a pen. I was like, great, he's going to ask for the bear's autograph. And I learned later on it was a bear flare, and he squeezed it, and this tiny fireball went out towards the bear, and I was like, oh, good, something to anger the bear. But the fireball bounced off the bear stopped, and then just ran the other way like it forgot something at home. And we all looked at each other like, oh, my gosh, that just happened. That just happened. And that's a true story. Well, most of that's true. Well, it's all true except there was no bear. No, there was a bear. I do sometimes lie up here. I'm not proud of it. But sometimes we all have to lie. Like, even when I tell my children not to lie, I'm kind of lying to them. Some people are like, you should never lie to a child. And those people don't have kids. Because when you have kids, you lie to them all the time. You're like, you wouldn't like this ice cream. It's very spicy. I'd share, but Santa said I can't. Now, why don't you go to sleep so I can wrestle your mom? I'm not encouraging lying. I'm just saying there are times when you need to, right? Like, if you're late to meet someone and you see that they're already angry and you don't have an excuse, you have to lie. Because if you told that person the truth, they would never speak to you again.
You gotta be like, hey, I gotta come clean. I just couldn't motivate to get going. I mean, eventually I could. What I'm trying to say is I don't value your time.
I've identified there are two times when it's socially acceptable to lie. To spare someone's feelings, it's okay to lie. It's also okay to lie to cover up a murder. Allow me to explain. When we discover someone's a murderer, we also learn they've done some fibbing. But we tend to focus on the murder part. You never hear, I'm angry he killed that guy, but frankly, I'm more upset about the lying. It's the dishonesty that bothers me. Some trust has been broken. Speaking of lying murderers, I watch a lot of Dateline. I don't want to brag. Some other winners out there. If you're unfamiliar or you have a life, Dateline is a news magazine show, like 60 Minutes. But at one point, Dateline just went all in on murder. And it's usually spousal murder. Like, if you watch Dateline, it appears most marriages end in murder. Every episode starts the same. They had the perfect marriage. But you know someone's getting killed. A husband, a wife, sometimes they'll get someone else to kill their spouse, which seems impersonal. Like, you took a vow, do it yourself. Anyway, I was watching this one episode of Dateline about this guy who murdered his wife. It was gruesome. I was watching with my wife on our anniversary. My wife didn't care. I mean, she wasn't thrilled I was taking notes. What are you writing down? This guy's just sloppy. It's like he's trying to get caught. If anything, this guy's plan was foolproof. What he did on his anniversary is he threw a party for him and his wife, and they invited all their friends so that they could see how happy they were. And then the next morning, he took his wife fishing. He rented a boat, he brought a cooler, some tackle, three concrete blocks, and a tarp. You know, for fishing. And he would have gotten away with the whole thing. But 3 months after his wife disappeared at sea, he got engaged to a stripper, which is kind of suspicious. And to celebrate their engagement, they dropped acid, as tradition would have. And while tripping on acid, he admitted the whole thing to his fiance. And she turned him in because she didn't appreciate the dishonesty. And as the episode ended, all I could think is, I'm a terrific husband. I've never even thought of murdering my wife. Well, I've never made plans to murder my wife. Well, I don't own concrete blocks. I can see some of you are like, Jim, I don't like the murder jokes. I don't like them. But wouldn't it be great if in a week you learned I was a murderer? Because then you could brag. You could be like, oh my gosh, we were at the taping for a special. And he had all these jokes on murder. Were they good? Not really, no. He was better at murder than comedy. If you know me, I would do anything for my wife. And that's part of my alibi. No. I would do anything for my wife, but I'm not a romantic person. I wish I was. There are moments when it's glaringly obvious. I get to travel so much doing stand-up. I did a show in Cologne, Germany, and before the show, I was walking over this bridge that went across the Rhine River, and as I walked across, I noticed there were hundreds of locks on this bridge, and each of the locks had two initials. And it was apparent that couples had put their lock there as a symbol of their relationship. And I looked at it, and I thought, that's perfect. Nothing captures love like a rusty padlock dangling over filthy water. But it was visually spectacular, and it affected me. I'm almost embarrassed to admit this. I found myself spending the next hour just kind of looking for a hardware store in this town I had never been in. I spent an hour looking, and eventually I found a hardware store. I went in, and I bought a bolt cutter. And I went back, and I started snipping off the lock. And with each snip, I said, it's over. Over. You're free. And people were giving me dirty looks. Now, what a grand romantic gesture, right? But you know the first guy who did that was a psycho. Like, his partner or girlfriend was not a willing participant.
He's like, you're probably wondering why I brought you to the middle of the bridge in March. I'm going to do something you'll never, ever forget. Oh my gosh, are you going to jump? No, I want to put this lock here. I'll put it here as a symbol of our love. And soon others will do it. And the bridge will be covered with locks. But you'll know that the first lock was a symbol of our love. And the woman was like, is that my bike lock? Not anymore.
Jim, that's a sad story. Recently, I was invited to a surprise birthday party. It was a surprise birthday party for a dog. That's right, I have friends that are mentally ill. I went, it was in my apartment building, and I needed the material. And to be fair, the dog was surprised. Didn't suspect a thing. Dog didn't know it was his birthday. Dog didn't know it had a birthday. The dog wasn't sure why people were in the apartment. It was the dog's third birthday, which in dog years doesn't matter. Someone made that up, and we just went along with it.
Oh, 1 year equals seven for doggies? Okay. When I see a dog, I'll do math.
That's not fulfilling some dog need. You know, there's not a dog sitting in a bar right now going, I'm not three, I'm 21. I can legally drink. That's not how dogs keep track of time. If you have a dog, you know they don't keep track of time. You've left your home, forgotten something, walked back in, only to be greeted by your dog like you've just returned from war.
You're back! It's a miracle! You're back after I don't know how long, because I'm a dog!
These poor dogs! We just attach these points of view on these poor dogs. Like dog is man's best friend. How desperate are humans?
We're best friends, right?
Dog's like, well, aren't we different species?
But we're best friends forever.
You know, you locked me in the house all day with nothing but a bowl of water. You'd think you let your best friend sit on the couch.
We're best friends. Now put on this fireman's outfit. We're going to do a photo shoot for Instagram.
You know, sometimes when you sleep, I think about eating your face. But I get it. I love dogs, too. I love animals. We all have the friend that announces they love animals in a way that implies the rest of us are drowning kittens.
Yeah, but I love animals.
Well, that's a pretty exclusive group of just you and anyone who's not a serial killer.
Yeah, but I just get along with animals better.
Or humans don't like you. I did have an opportunity to go on a safari, which was unbelievable. It was breathtaking how bad the Wi-Fi was. I went on a safari, which is just a fancy word for animal stalking. Because that's what you do on a safari. You follow animals and watch them. You're like... Beautiful. It's a good thing these animals can't report us to the police. Yeah, officer, that fat guy in the untucked shirt followed me for an hour this morning. I woke up and he was taking pictures of me and my family. We were naked. Yeah, the guy who looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman. On the safari, I saw one animal kill another animal, and intellectually I was like, I don't want to see that. But emotionally, in the moment, I was like, get him. My kids were totally savage about it. They're like, come, come, I want blood. My kids are with me. My kids were poorly behaved on a safari. They're 6 and 7, and animals would walk by like, savages. My two youngest are 6 and 7-year-old boys, and they're total savages. They're constantly picking on me. They're jumping on me. And they pick on me. How they pick on me recently is they make fun of my... what they call my huge boy part. Now, before you think I'm walking around the house naked, or in fact have a huge boy part, you should know that, like, when you have young sons, you have to constantly encourage them to use the bathroom. And if you're a dad, sometimes you pee with them. So that's why they've seen my boy part. But that doesn't explain why sometimes at dinner they'll just point at me and giggle and go, Dad and his huge boy part. I never know what to say. I'm like, guilty. You got me again. Didn't you hear that, honey? Lovely weather out there. I prefer the cold to hot. I do. I know that's surprising looking at me, given I look like a snowman. But I prefer the cold, you know? Last summer, I was in Las Vegas. It was 114 degrees. 114 degrees. You can actually hear the sun at that point. It didn't feel safe. I was like, are we supposed to be here? 114. Like, you're never at a friend's house. You're like, warm in here. Yeah, I set the thermostat to 114. That's how I like it. I'm part lizard. Thermostats don't even go up that high. Meat thermometers do. I think God is just cooking people in Vegas. Oh, that one's smoking. I love smoked meat. It was 114 degrees, which was shocking, but not as shocking as how casually Las Vegas residents just went about their day in that heat. It was like, you were like, let's play Frisbee. Time to walk the dog. I was like, get inside! The earth is on fire! Get inside and beg for God's forgiveness. You've obviously angered him. That's why Vegas is called Sin City. It's the same temperature as hell. I have a friend from Vegas. I told him it was 114. He goes, that's nothing. I'm like, no, that's something.
That's actually the temperature you boil water at.
It's not that bad. Not if you're making ramen. Like, that's our summer.
That's not summer. Summer is when you barbecue on a grill, not the sidewalk. It's so weird to be places where summer is the enemy. I was like, in the Southwest, they talk about summer like it's an ex-lover they never want to see again.
We gotta get out of here before summer gets here. Last year, I couldn't leave my house when summer was here.
You ever notice the further north you go, the more obsessed people are with summer? Like, in February, I was in Bangor, Maine, and everyone was talking about summer. Everyone I met, they're like, you got to come back during summer. You got to come back. Which is a strange way to greet someone. Hi, how are you? Come back later. And it was everyone. You got to come back during summer. You got to come. Yeah, but I'm here now. Just make sure you come back. I didn't want to come the first time. But I love how northern cities sell summer. They're like, summer here is unbelievable. It's perfect. For 1/12 of the year, it's ideal. Otherwise, it's a tundra filled with alcoholism and depression. But for those 13-odd days, it's worth it. I did nothing today. Didn't feel any pressure to do anything. Some places you feel like a pressure to do something. Like, St. Louis, you got to go see our arch. I don't want to. Go look at our arch. Why don't I just go to McDonald's and see two? San Antonio, you got to go to the Alamo.
I was going to nap.
Now you got to stand outside in blistering heat and look at a building.
Can't I just say I forgot about the Alamo?
You know who didn't want to go to the Alamo? The people who died at the Alamo. I bet their last thought was, I wish I didn't go to the Alamo. I thought it was a rental car company.
Can you imagine that level of bravery? 187 Texans fought 2,000 of Santa Ana's finest Mexican troops, and at one point those 187 Texans just decided, we should just fight till we all die. Like, if I was there, I would have been like, excuse me, I love the idea of Texas too, but have you tried this Mexican food? It is delicioso. I propose we remember the guacamole.
Of course, Vegas, the big assignment, is to gamble. Nobody ever admits they gamble when they go to Las Vegas. You going to Vegas? You going to gamble?
I'm going to see shows.
You're not going to gamble at all?
Well, if I walk by a poker table, I might sit down and lose $10,000. I'm mainly going for the shows.
We don't like to admit we gamble. People never admit. They're like, I'm not gambling. I'm just pulling this lever. I like to pull levers. A good arm workout. I'm not gambling. I'm just watching these horses run and letting the winner determine if I keep my home.
We are a country that loves to bet on horses. Every spring we track the three races of the Triple Crown. Every spring I always have the same thought. We're still doing this? Is Woodrow Wilson president? But people love the Triple Crown. The Kentucky Derby, where people bet on horses while they're dressed like characters from Gone with the Wind. Like prom for gamblers.
You like my hat? I'm living in my sister's garage. Because I have a debilitating gambling addiction. Shall we have another mint julep? That was announced the winner of each race on the news. You can always tell the horse was named by a guy on his eighth wife. The horse is always named like Viagra's Revenge. Alimony be damned. They show a picture of the winning horse on the news. They could show us a picture of any horse. We wouldn't know the difference. I don't know what we're supposed to do with that horse image. It's not like we're going to run into that horse in a bar. Excuse me, did you win the Kentucky Derby?
I did. I won the Kentucky Derby. Now I'm in a bar enjoying a Heffenbeisen.
There is the classic photo of the winning horse, right? They're always wearing that huge horseshoe wreath of flowers they stole from someone's gravesite. Standing next to the winning horse is the owner of the horse, who did not train the horse, did not ride the horse, and based on body language, has never really met the horse. There the owner stands, looking like they've never paid taxes. Sitting on top of the winning horse is the jockey, who's dressed like he just came from a local pride parade.
There was an interview with a jockey expecting some insight. They're like, how'd you win? The jockey's like, I whipped the horse and it ran. Very rare for a horse to win all three races of the Triple Crown, mainly because they're horses and they don't care. Mostly they just want someone to stop whipping them. Because they're horses. I didn't know this. After the Triple Crown, all those horses retire. They retire at the age of 3, which feels early. They retire, and then they're sent out to stud. Those horses get paid to have sex, which in some ways is better than winning the Triple Crown. That's like the quadruple crown. That's got to be an adjustment for those horses. Like, hey, remember when we whipped you and we wanted you to run? Well, now when we whip you, we're going to have you do something a little different. How many horse jokes is this guy gonna do? I never thought I'd miss a murder joke. There's a lot more horse jokes. And if you haven't noticed, I know nothing about horses. I don't horseback ride, mainly because I prefer to be comfortable, and it's not the 1800s. I'm sure the horses aren't thrilled either. They're like, why am I carrying you around? I saw you drive up in a Honda Civic. But people like the horseback ride. I have a friend, she told me the reason she enjoys horseback riding is because she loves horses, which seems like a strange way of expressing love for something, making it carry you around on its back. I mean, I love my great aunt Katie. I'm not going to make her carry me around on her back. Not anymore. Yeah. I don't even know why we have to specify that it's horseback riding. Other people are like, hey, you want to ride a horse? What part? The part that looks like a seat, the back. Oh, good, because I've done horse ass riding. That was painful. I kept falling off. I should probably tell you, the rest of the show is all horse jokes. Is he serious? There are different types of horses. He's going to keep going, isn't he? No, there are breeds of horses, right? Which is different from horse breeding. I don't know if you've ever seen two horses breed, but that'll keep you awake at night. If you've never seen two horses breed, do not YouTube it. Do not YouTube it and print out still images. Don't do that. Don't affix your face on one of the images and show your wife think it's funny. She won't think it's funny. But that says more about her than you. What was I talking about? Horses. It's strange how we treat horses. We give horses shoes. I don't even know if horses need shoes. You never see a horse in the wild walking around like, ow, ow. Wish I had some damn shoes. We give horses shoes that are metal. Metal? That's worse than Crocs. That must be hard to shop for, right? Do you have anything in metal, but not a slip-on? Something I could nail to my foot. That's what we do. We nail it to their foot. And when we're not doing that, we're literally tossing the horseshoe around as a game. The horse must be like, what the hell are you doing with my shoe? Probably looks like we're taunting the horse. Hey, horse, why don't you come and get your shoe? Go and grab it all you can because you don't have hands. The horseshoe, a symbol of luck for everyone but the horse. I don't know if this is true. Someone told me that when horses are sent out to stud, some female horses will wear high heel horseshoes. Makes them more confident. I'm going to be paying for this later on, huh? Oh, and I've been on my feet all day. Got to be the end of the horse jokes. Horse people, and I'm not talking about people that are half horse, half human, which are centaurs, and they don't exist anymore, right? No, people who own horses will tell you that the horse can't even feel the nail going in their foot. Not that anyone's ever heard a horse go, that's fine, hammer away. Next time, glue, just don't tell me where you got the glue from. Oh, that was too edgy? There's no horses in here. There's not a horse in the front row going, hey, take it easy on the glue, Joe. I'm gonna I love how some of you look forward. Is there a horse up there? It's strange how we treat horses, you know? The most shocking way we treat horses is when they break their leg, we shoot them. That's a harsh medical plan. And someone explained the reason they shoot horses when they break their leg is because it's unlikely the leg will heal properly. And I was like, unlikely? So there's a chance? Can you imagine how stressed out horses must be? Like I stepped on a branch. It was a branch! Put down the gun! Look at the branch! It's a branch! Even if they're injured, they're like, I'll walk it off. I'm going to walk it off. Put the gun down. Jeez, you guys, anyone... You ever heard of Ben Gay? What's going on? Put down the... I can see on some of your faces that you would frankly prefer if I did more horse jokes. Okay. It's odd how we treat horses, because we live in this era where we treat our dogs and cats as family members. People are always trying to get their dog on an airplane. You know, it's just a matter of time before someone brings a horse on a plane. Are you kidding me? This is my therapy horse. It keeps me calm on the flight. Oh, we'd like to welcome our Silver Medallion members to board. And anyone traveling with a farm animal, you can board at gate 47. Feel free to grab some sugar cubes that we've... Horsepower. Horsepower is so different from girl power. You know what I mean? It's like, you go, horse. Hey. Is what horses eat. Okay, I can tell at this point, there's probably one or two or 300 of you that are frankly annoyed by the horse jokes. And I want you to know that your annoyance gives me pleasure. All right, you know what? That's no more horse jokes, I promise. I promise. All right? Anyway, ponies are completely different. Here's the problem with doing roughly 10 minutes of horse jokes. Besides the audience hating you for the rest of their lives, is for the next couple minutes, you will all be like, is there a horse joke coming? Or you're going to be like, he could have put a horse joke in there. He didn't use the reference giddy up. Why wouldn't he put it in there? But I want you to put the horse jokes aside. Put them in a barn. And I'm going to talk about something else. Maybe. No, it's over. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I did some shows in Europe, and I only bring that up to try and impress you. But I flew over, really the only way to get across the Atlantic. You rarely run into someone that's like, you know what, I paddleboard. It was a great arm workout. I flew over. That transatlantic flight wipes people out. People are a mess. They're like, I need a day. I need a day. The flight doesn't sound that hard. It's like, oh, it's brutal. I had to sit and watch two movies. I felt like I was being waterboarded. I need a day. It's flying back, 3,000 miles, 7 hours. We landed. The guy sitting next to me was like, that took too long. It used to take 6 weeks. On a boat. If you survive. That's how long it took Columbus to get from Spain to the Western Hemisphere. 6 weeks. But you know, once Columbus got here, it was like, I need a day. I am so boat-lagged. Give me a day and I'll get right down to murdering and plundering. Jim, don't bring up Columbus. You're too white. But Columbus, that's part of our history, right? Columbus ushered in all these people that came to the Western Hemisphere, and some of them did bad things. But humans have done bad things throughout the world. Like in Australia, the way some of the settlers treated the Aboriginals, it was not nice. It was not a g'day. In fact, it was a series of bad days or bidets. In New Zealand, the settlers shared the land with the native people, the Maori people, a very noble, warrior-like people. But the Maori weren't even the first people in New Zealand. The first people in New Zealand were the Moriori, and then the Maori came and ate them. Not even making that up. That's the most intimidating thing you could do to your enemy, right? It's like, oh, you're going to kill me? Yeah, and then I'm going to grab some mayonnaise. What do you need? Oh. Can you imagine those initial English settlers in New Zealand? Because the British had conquered the world. They had colonies on every continent. So by the time they got to New Zealand, they're like, we've done this before. Let's meet with the locals and take over. So they met with the Maori, and they're like, so what happened to these Maori people? Did you kill them? And they're like, yeah, and then we ate them. The English were like, we were thinking we could share the islands. You want to share? You're not hungry now, are you? You know what? Get them some shepherd's pie. Tell them it's made out of shepherds. Jim even makes colonialism about eating. There were cannibals. By the way, at one time, all human civilizations were cannibal, which means back then it meant something different when someone said, I'm craving Indian or Thai. I can see how you want to be offended, but there's no reason. When I was in Europe, I tried all the local specialties, you know. Norway, I tried reindeer meat. I was in a Norwegian butcher shop in January, and they had a sale on reindeer meat, and nothing says Christmas season is over. Quite like a sale on reindeer meat. It's got to be a tough day for Santa. Look, I want to thank all you reindeer who helped this Christmas. Great job. Now, when I call your name, come with me into the smokehouse. France, I ate so much cheese, so much delicious French cheese, and I feel like I'm still digesting it. My delicate American body couldn't handle the French cheese. And it's not like I don't eat cheese. Most of you are looking at me like, we think you eat cheese. We think you might only eat cheese. But the French, they eat cheese on a whole other level. In France, they make eating cheese an official course of the meal. So you'll eat an appetizer, then you'll eat an entree, then for no reason at all, you eat a bunch of chunks of cheese. Then you eat dessert. After that, you go to the hospital. And of course, I've eaten chunks of cheese before, just not in public. Or with pants on. Eating chunks of cheese, that's something I'm usually caught doing. My wife's like, what the hell are you doing? Nothing, honey! Hey! I remember the first time I had the cheese course, I'd eaten an appetizer, I'd eaten my entree, and I started eating the cheese course, and I heard my heart say, are you mad at me? Did I do something to anger you? My brain took over. It's all right, there's going to be some sweating. Files, you can take a couple weeks off. Appendix, get ready to blow. Tried so many delicious French cheeses, and I couldn't tell you the name of one of them. And they would tell me the names, they're like, this is Jean. From the Jean region. And I'd be like, so not cheddar? Because I tried cheddar. You guys get cheddar over here yet? I like me some cheddar. Some of the French cheeses I tried were goat cheese, or as the goats call it, cheese. They're not caught up in your cow cheese bias. You know, when I see cheese, I don't even see an animal. I just see something my body can't process. I like goat cheese. I'd never looked at a goat and thought, I bet that would make good cheese. How do we even get to the point of goat cheese? With someone like, this cow cheese is good, but see that dog that looks like it smokes meth? Can someone try and milk it? I got a hunch you would make cheese that would go great with beets. Those Europeans, they have a different approach to dairy. When they make a sandwich in Europe, they put butter on the bread. They put butter on the bread and then mayonnaise. That's like putting on contacts and glasses. Butter on the bread of a sandwich, that actually sounds like something Americans would do that Europeans would criticize us for.
Those American pigs, when they make a sandwich, they put butter on the bread. No wonder they fat pink.
That's a good impression of absolutely every European. I did love doing shows over there. You never knew what was going to work. Sometimes there's a language barrier. There's different references. There's famous people in other countries we've never heard of. I was doing this show in Ireland before, doing the sound check before the show, and the sound guy was like, do you have any special requests? And I jokingly said, well, I'll probably close my show by singing Raglan Road, which is a famous Irish folk song based on a famous Irish poem. And the sound guy was like, oh, don't recommend that. And I was like, well, I was kidding, but why? And he goes, well, recently Billy Joel did that. And I was like, who's Billy Joel? And he goes, you don't know who Billy Joel is. I was like, I'm from another country. I don't know who's famous here. What is it, Superman's dad? I don't know. He goes, Billy Joel is from America. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's an American who's famous in Ireland that I've never heard of. No, Billy Joel, piano man, uptown girl. And I was like, oh, you mean Billy Joel. And he goes, no, it's Billy Joel. And for a second I thought, maybe he's right. This would be the first time I've discovered I mispronounced someone's name for my entire life. In my mind, I started going through every conversation I had on Billy Joel. I'm like, did anyone else say Billy Joel? When I said Billy Joel, did anyone look at me strange? And then I remembered, you know who pronounces it Billy Joel? Billy Joel. And at that point, the opening act had come in, and he was also from Ireland. And I said, hey, this sound guy calls Billy Joel Billy Joel. And the Irish comic goes, it is Billy Joel. Is everyone crazy in this country? But there's no one in Ireland named Joel? And he goes, yeah, we call them Joel. And I was like, well, then what would you call someone who's actually named Joel? And he goes, you mean like Billy Joel? Stop it! No! I loved Ireland. I spent 2 weeks there. One of the weeks I was in Donegal, which is a county in the northwestern part of the Republic. And I noticed something. Everyone in Donegal has a washer and dryer, but nobody uses their dryer. They're like, that won't be necessary. We'll just hang that out to dry. And I was kind of skeptical, but I was staying with friends, and they offered to do my laundry, so they took my clothes, and they washed it, and they hung it out to dry. And I was kind of impressed, because after only 3 days, my clothes were still wet. Because what they've yet to realize is it rains every day in Donegal. It's like living in a shower. But my friend, she was so proud of the line dry. She goes, isn't that just better? Doesn't that smell glorious? Meanwhile, I'm holding a wet t-shirt. Yeah, this is great. I can just pretend I got off a log ride. Nothing better than waking up on a cold morning and putting on a wet Billy Joel t-shirt. My kids were with me. In Amsterdam, I brought my kids to the Anne Frank house. I told some friends that, and they're like, aren't your kids a little young for the Anne Frank house? And you know what I learned? They are. They're too young. But I wanted to bring them. You know, it's an important place. I want them to learn. So I brought them. We were standing outside the Anne Frank house, and I said, this is a special, somber place. This is where Anne Frank, her family, and some friends hid from the Nazis for 2 years, and they couldn't speak during the day, and Anne also wrote this diary. So let's be respectful. My six-year-old raised his hand, and he goes, do they have video games here? And I said, I'm going to need you to be quiet for the rest of your life. Bought tickets online to the Anne Frank House. I Googled it. The Anne Frank House has a Google rating of 4.4 out of 5 stars. Who's giving the Anne Frank House a bad review? Like, yeah, wasn't that fun? Kind of crowded, and there were no video games. we feel the need to review everything. Nobody's going to Anne Frank's house looking for hot dogs.
I misread it. I thought it was Anne Frank house. I was getting ready to have me an Amsterdam dog.
When I travel with my kids, we always try and do one educational thing a day. It usually involves going to a museum. And museums are great. They're important. But they're also exhausting, right? Acting like you're interested in that crap. There's so much pressure to be impressed in a museum. It's like, ooh, look at that, kids. Wow, that's a water fountain. What do we got over here? And I've been to all types of museums. You know, I've been to children's museums, which are really just museums of diseases your kids can get from other people's kids. It's like, why don't you go over there and see if we can get the chicken pox? In Stockholm, I brought my kids to a ship museum, the Vasa Museum. It was a ship museum, but it only had one ship. So it felt more like a ship garage. But that one ship, the Vasa ship, sunk on its maiden voyage in Stockholm's harbor in the 1700s, which is not good. But that's the largest attraction in Sweden. Most countries, their big attraction is a design marvel, like the Sydney Opera House or the Eiffel Tower. But Sweden was like, here's our boat that didn't float. This is why we make furniture. That ironically floats. Often the museums are art museums, and those are the most intimidating, right? Because in art museums, they tell us what is the good art. We have no say in the matter. Like, that's good art. Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it. They treat everyone like a child in an art museum. Like, don't touch anything. Nobody touch anything. I wasn't gonna. Now I kind of want to. Everyone's speaking in hushed tones. Be respectful. We're about to look at the work of a madman. He painted this after he chopped off his own ear. Why are we whispering? Van Gogh's dead. Even if he was alive, he couldn't hear us. Recently after a show, someone came up to me. They're like, you know, it's not pronounced Van Gogh. It's pronounced Billy Joel. I do find it hard to leave art museums, mainly because I can't find the exit. Great, another room filled with paintings of ugly Dutch people. In the 1600s, they painted every ugly Dutch person. Hey, you're hard to look at. Can I do your portrait? Making that hay look good, aren't you? Fine art. I sometimes feel like it's wasted on me. You know, like the Mona Lisa, we've all seen the Mona Lisa. The most beautiful smile in the world. The most beautiful smile. I'm like, have you seen Halle Berry? Heck, have you seen Chuck Berry? I don't even know if Mona Lisa's smiling. To me, it looks like she just came from the dentist. She's like, Novocaine's wearing off. Our museums will occasionally ask if you'd like to become a member. Would you like to become a member? How often would I have to come here? I think I can only pretend to be interested once. There's always people sketching in an art museum. I always point them out to security. I'm like, copying. Got a forgery happening mid-forge. Those art museum security guards, you know, they're important. Some of that art is priceless. Some of it's on loan. You see that next to a painting? On loan from a rich person. The poor people may look at my art. Never let them get their peasant fingers on it. Some of that art is priceless. Recently, a Da Vinci painting sold for $450 million. Like, what room do you put that in your house?
I put that in the game room.
It was a Da Vinci painting, Salvatore de Mundo. It was a painting of Jesus, but it's not like Da Vinci even knew what Jesus looked like. He painted it 1,500 years after Jesus walked the earth. So he was just guessing. He's like, I don't know, he's got brown eyes probably? I don't know. He probably just painted someone he knew. You know, back in the day, people were like, what is that, your nephew Eddie? Da Vinci's like, no, that's Jesus.
the savior of the world. Eddie's wearing the same outfit as him. That's a coincidence.
So many paintings of Jesus, right? But there's really two types of paintings of Jesus. There's Jesus as an adult or Jesus as a baby. There's no teenage Jesus. There's no acne Jesus. It's the beginning of a mustache.
Jim, you're going to hell for that. And you sound so dumb right now.
That is my worst fear, is to come across like an idiot. And you guys are like, you should be terrified then. I mostly get nervous when I'm talking to really smart people. You ever been talking to someone and you hear yourself not make sense? But instead of stopping, you just keep talking.
You know what? I'll pull it together at the end. Oops, that might not have been a word.
That's usually the moment where I make eye contact with my wife. She's like, what the hell are you doing?
Trying to make you look good.
Here's how dumb I am. When someone's criticized on social media for being stupid, I get nervous. I'm like, oh, they're coming for all us dummies. Probably going to start with a spelling test or something. Kids aren't with me, but if we're really quiet, we can hear them screaming in New York City. When I travel without my children, in between those moments of guilt are just hours of happiness. I mean, I love my kids. I just love them more when I'm not with them. And when I travel without my kids, I do nothing. I'm so productive when I travel with them. When I'm not here, I do nothing. And then I'll do nothing all day, and then I'll call home, and my saintly wife will just pick up the phone, and there'll be chaos in the background. And she'll be like, what'd you do today? I'm like, what'd I do? Well, I got up, did that a couple times. Enough about me, what about you? I should put my kids on the phone. They'd be like, third grade, it's hard. And I'm like, it gets so much worse. School is hard, you know. I try and be supportive in the morning. I'll be like, look, I know you don't want to go, but just remember, I never have to go to school again. Anyway, off you go. I'm going to nap. I wouldn't want to be a kid. I like the age I am. I wouldn't want to be a teenager. I wouldn't want to be in my 20s. I like being 30 years old. I try and schedule tours around school breaks. You know, like at Christmas one year, I did a bunch of shows in Florida. My wife and kids came down. My wife's family also came down because they didn't want us to have a good time. I'm kidding. I love my wife's family. Does that sound believable? I do love them. They're my in-laws. That's a strange term, in-laws.
Are you related? Legally. In a court of law.
In-law, it's like the opposite of being in love.
We're in law. We law each other. Very much.
In-laws are like family you're assigned.
It's like, you want to spend your life with that person? You got to take those 10 people.
All of them? My only issue with my in-laws is there's too many of them. My wife is one of 9 children, so every holiday, all 9 of the siblings and their individual families all get together and spend every moment together. Over Christmas, I went to a movie with 30 people. I didn't even know that was legal. We were walking around, people thought we were from a church. To put it in perspective, Jesus only walked around with 12. I learned very quickly, I don't want to do anything with 30 people. If I was on the Titanic and the last rescue boat was filled with 30 people, I'd be like, you guys, go ahead. I don't want to be there when you're trying to decide where to eat lunch. Often it was more than 30 people, because sometimes those 30 people will invite other people. So you'll have conversations and someone will be like, I'm your wife's uncle's best friend. I'm like, oh, there's a term for that. Stranger. You're a total stranger. I do love my wife's parents. Their names are Louise and Dominic, so I call them Louise and Dom. My wife's siblings, some of them have gotten married, and their spouses, some of their spouses, call Louise and Dom Mom and Dad, because they're weirdos. Now, I understand sometimes you marry into a family and you become so close to the parents that you want to call them Mom and Dad, but don't. It's weird and confusing for the rest of us. Wait, that's his mom? He married his sister? What state is he from? This is, by the way, this is all prosthetic. After the show, it comes off. I just air it out. It's like, I feel so free when I get it off. You know what I mean? It's getting harder and harder to motivate to exercise. In your 20s, you're like, you know, I want to be with someone physically fit, so I'll be physically fit. And then your 30s, you're like, I want to fight off aging. And then your 40s, you're like, it's over. And now I'm at the point where I look at morbidly obese people and I'm like, they seem happy. That's one way to live a life. I used to exercise to lose weight. Now I exercise so I can continue to fit in cars. Still a fitness goal. I've been in better shape in my life. I go in and out. You know, it's been a while. Not last year, but the year before, my big accomplishment is I ran the New York City Marathon. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Half of you are like, no, you didn't. I did, you bastards. All right? I ran and completed. All right, fine, I didn't. But I thought about it. Which I guess is technically different than running it. Turns out I couldn't run the New York City Marathon because I didn't want to. Which is the main reason I don't do a lot of things. I just rarely admit it. It's like, hey, Jim, why don't you come to my birthday party? I didn't want to. We never really reply to invitations that way. Don't want to go. Completely available, just not interested. Really wish I wasn't there, so I won't be. I know people who have run the New York City Marathon. They always bring it up, like, yeah, I ran the New York City Marathon. I was asked, did you win? No, but I finished. What place you come in? I don't know. Sounds like you came in last. Really, what you're saying is you lost the New York City Marathon. If I were you, I wouldn't bring that up. But that's why some people run marathons, so that they can say, I ran a marathon, which to me is not a good enough reason. Heck, I can say I ran a marathon. In fact, earlier I did. Didn't feel good. It felt dishonest. I guess what I'm trying to say is marathon runners are liars. All of them. It's too far. It's way too far. 26.2 miles, that's too far to run, jog, or frankly drive. Let's be fair. But you know what? I'm not a runner. Half of you are like, we never thought you were. At this point, we're not sure if you're a walker. But running is huge, right? There are stores just for runners. There's magazines dedicated to running. Runner's World, a magazine all about running. And if you thought running was boring, wait till you read about running. At this point, is there any information we don't have on running?
Oh, you're supposed to use your arms when you run.
What? I think I've been running backwards. I keep losing. The runner's high. I'm sure that's not a myth. Let me get this right. You're confusing exhaustion for high? Have you ever been high before? How can you confuse I can't breathe with joy? The runner's high. Has anyone ever used that as an excuse? Sorry, I ate all the chips. Runner's high. Yeah, I ran a 10K in high school. I think I'm still high. But there's running, and then there's running a marathon. You know you have to pay to run a marathon? What? For the New York City Marathon, you have to pay $250 to run by yourself. 26 miles. That's some S&M stuff there. That's like the subplot of a Law & Order Special Victims Unit. You gotta pay that up front. It's not like there's like a toll system like 13 miles. I'm a chip. What is this, a chip reader? You ever see the beginning of a marathon? All the runners line up in their voluntary prison number. And then someone shoots a gun, red flag. And the runners disperse like Godzilla's approaching. Ah! Why is there a weapon involved in a foot race? Whatever happened to someone saying, go? All right, let's review how we're going to start the marathon. We'll get all the lemmings lined up there, and then without any warning, Cooter will shoot his 357. In the air this time, Cooter. Then we'll just sit back, count the money, and watch some of them soil themselves. You ever see the winner of a marathon? They do not look healthy. They look like they were forced to run a marathon. Like it was some negotiation as part of ransom. I finished, now can I have my children? I ran 26 miles, I drank my own urine, I'm wearing a tinfoil blanket. What's going on with my kids? Of course I respect people who run marathons. Heck, I'm impressed by the people who pass out water at marathons. I was looking at them like, I couldn't do that. Probably got to get up early. Then you got to find cups. Then there's passing out all that water. My arm's just sore thinking about it. At least those people are doing something at the marathon. You ever see the rest of people watching the marathon? They're like, going on in your life? If you're watching strangers run a marathon, I suppose some of them are there supporting friends. You know, I wouldn't want that. I don't even want someone to see me in a hurry. That seems like a big request of a friend, right? Hey, can you watch me run 26 miles? Only take your entire Sunday. You can only watch someone run part of a marathon. It's not that big of a commitment. It's like, you can do it, you can do it. All right, I'm going to brunch. But you can watch someone run a marathon. You can't go into a health club and watch someone on a treadmill.
Excuse me, sir, what are you doing? I'm supporting that lady. Do you know her? Not yet. But I brought her this lock for the bridge.
All right, that is all for me. Thank you very much. So fun. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.